Interlude. The Imperialis, 25 years ago. It is the first time Galli has been off Jakku in 10 years, and only the second time ever, at least as far as he can remember. He does not know who his parents are or where they came from. Sometimes he imagines that they came from some faraway place, a place of rivers and forests, a place with a sea. Other times, he is angry at them, and he thinks,
"Who my parents are does not matter.
They aren't my everything. They aren't my anything."
He envisions in these times of anger that they are dirt merchants or sand farmers from Jakku, and it will be his great pleasure to transcend them. It is far more likely that they are dead. Now he sits in a plush room, more opulent than anything he's ever seen before. This is the same ship as the last time he left Jakku, but this time he is no stowaway. This is not some cargo space in which he hides. He sits on a chair. It is the most comfortable chair he has ever sat in. He wants to live in this chair. He may be fine dying in this chair. And dying on this chair may in fact be what awaits him. The man to whom this ship belongs, a man named Sheev Palpatine, is a cipher. Galli has only met him once ever, but the man has haunted his dreams since. Those dark robes, that craggy moon face, they are just dreams, surely, and yet they seem real. As if the man is truly visiting Galli in some way during those meager hours he could carve out for sleep. He's met the man's droids, too. Some are cold protocol droids, others assassins, astromechs, and excavators who helped clear the ground at Jakku. And he's spoken time and again to an advisor, someone named Teshu. But Galli has only met the man himself once. And now, he's about to have his second meeting. He fears that death will be the result. He has been used for one purpose, and that purpose is now finished. The observatory is built. Galli did what he had to do to keep everyone away. None discovered it, and now it is buried beneath the sands near the plaintive hand. "My usefulness is over," he thinks. The man will kill him. Part of Galli finds strange comfort in that. Another part of him thinks, "No, I will kill the man first." Even though the man has magic. Real magic. And not the parlor tricks of the anchorites. The way he summoned sand to his hand, like a flying serpent. Wait. He's here. Standing in the doorway. Hands clasped underneath the draping sleeves of his night-black robes. Only half of his face can be seen underneath the hood. In that glimpse, the boy can see the awfulness there, as if dark magic has distorted his visage. It is a good reminder that this man has true power, unlike anything Galli has ever seen. And with that, the boy quickly stifles any threat in his mind, lest the old sorcerer have the ability to pluck stray thoughts from inside his skull. Palpatine enters the room, and with a gentle swipe of his hand, a chair moves toward him. It eases and whirls, settling in front of Galli's own chair. The man sits, and his hand begins another gesture. The palm rises, as if asking a worshipper to get off his knees. Galli isn't sure if the gesture is meant for him, but he soon sees it isn't. Just as the chair moved, a table moves too, rising out of a telescoping portal in the floor. This table is like no table Galli knows. It is circular in shape, but with a square board carved into its top. That larger square is hand-etched with a field of smaller black and white squares, and in those squares are circles of opposite color. As the table rises, so too do pieces from within those circles. Each idol is a carving, crudely sculpted. They are symmetrical on each side of the board. Each side gets the same contingent of pieces. He sees pieces that look like beasts, like men with large hats, like warriors, like something that may in fact be a starship. He also sees pieces at the far end of each side that look not unlike Palpatine himself. Tall but bent and similarly robed. The one piece in front of Palpatine is in black robes with a white face. The piece in front of Galley is clad in white, with a dark countenance.
"Hello, Galley," Palpatine says.
"Hello."
"It has been some time."
He swallows a knot.
"Be strong. You are not some boy. You are almost a man now. You are Vorka, not Mouse. You have killed for him."
With that, he lifts his trembling chin to appear fearless and proud.
"It has."
"The artifacts are in place. The core has been drilled. The sentinels and my advisor, Teshu, report you have been very loyal to us indeed."
He draws a deep breath and shows his yellow teeth in a smile.
"The observatory is done, and so is your time on that wretched planet."
"Yes, here it is,"
he thinks. His death awaits. The 10 years since he's seen this man were just a delay of the inevitable.
"I don't want to die."
He says it not to plead, but just to say it. The man must know.
"Of course you don't. You have a destiny. Those with destinies are bound to fight for life, because life and destiny are irrevocably intertwined."
"And those without destinies?"
The man waves his bone-white hand dismissively.
"They do not know that they crave death, but they do."
"Are you going to kill me?"
"It is not my intention."
"Then why am I here?"
"As I say, your time on Jakku is over. You are done. You did as I asked, and so I am rewarding you with a new life away from that place."
His heart leaps.
"Away from Jakku? Am I to go back there?"
"Not today. Perhaps one day."
"I don't ever want to go back."
A slow smile spreads. The man's lips are empurpled, like a bruise sliced in half, so that a tongue and teeth may emerge through the slit.
"And yet it may be your destiny. That part is unclear."
Palpatine leans forward, his pointed finger drawing invisible lines over the strange game board there.
"Do you know this game, Galley?"
"I don't."
"No, I suppose you wouldn't. It's a very old game. Chatez, in this iteration. Though over the eons I have seen it spawn many variants. Djarik, Mobius, Chess. In most of the iterations, the core mechanism remains."
"Are we going to play?"
"We will. But first, I need you to understand not just how the pieces move, but why they move. Not just how to play, but why we play."
Palpatine smiles.
"Listen closely."
And then Palpatine explains the game.
"In the game of Chatez,"
Palpatine tells the young man, Galley,
"the board is called the Domain, and each piece upon the Domain has its own special role and its own special maneuvers. Each player is afforded one of each kind.
With an arthritic claw, the Emperor twists a piece that looks like a too thin man in a strange pillar-like hat.
The vizier can only move along the diagonal, but has no limit to how far he may travel.
With the side of a yellowed nail, he taps another piece. A hulking hooded figure with something that might be a long rifle or a long blade. The abstraction of the carving makes it hard to tell. As the nail goes click, click, click against it, Palpatine says,
"This is the knight. He is versatile and can move 2 steps in any direction at all. Limited distance, but freedom of movement."
He goes on like that for a while, describing piece after piece. The outcast, the dowager, the disciple, the counselor, the beast, the craft. He describes how they move, what role they serve, even a little bit of the history. Later iterations of the game, he said, removed the outcast, for the outcast was too anarchic a piece, and the players sought a more stable game. Galley follows along, unsure of what he's supposed to be learning. But he pays great attention, never blinking, never turning his gaze away, lest it all disappear the moment he does.
"Each piece exists in service to one other piece."
And here, the teacher grabs the final figure off the board, the robed piece that looks not unlike Palpatine himself.
"The Imperator. All the pieces of the domain are here to protect the Imperator. If the Imperator falls, the game is over. That is true no matter how many pieces remain on the board. Do you see?"
"I see."
"Tell me then what that means."
Galley swallows. He concentrates very hard to suss out the message, the lesson that the Emperor is trying to teach him. He clears his throat and says,
"It means that without the Imperator, the domain cannot survive."
A smile creeps across the Emperor's face, like a centipede crawling on a cracked wall.
"Good, good. That is true. That is insightful."
The smile suddenly falls away. The man's face twists up in a scowl of disappointment. With venom, the old man asserts,
"But it is not quite right. It is not merely that the domain cannot survive. It is that those remaining behind do not deserve to survive."
His voice is laced with anger, the volume rising and the words coming faster as he continues,
"They have one role. That role is to protect the Imperator. If an empire cannot protect its emperor, then the empire must be deemed a failure. It collapses not only because its central figure is gone, but because it must not be allowed to remain."
By the end of the old man's tirade, Galley tries to speak and cannot. He tries to breathe and cannot. He reaches for his neck and paws at his throat. A high-pitched keen, the only sound escaping his mouth. His face pulses and throbs. His vision begins to go dark. "This is it. This is me dying. I have failed the lesson." Palpatine waves his hand, and the pressure closing Galley's throat is gone as fast as it came. The young man gasps and tries not to cry. Palpatine reaches out and takes Galley's hand with a grasp that is alarmingly gentle. The man's skin is papery and thin. It's almost sharp, too, as if running your hands along his flesh in the wrong direction will slice your own like a razor.
"It angers me," Palpatine says sadly, "to think of an empire that fails its emperor. But one must admit that it is possible.
And in that possibility, it is wise to play the very long game. It is time I look to the unforgivable outcome and plan for that.
You are part of that plan.
How?
You, my son, are the contingency.
What is that?
There are unforeseen costs that must be paid. You may have to be the one who pays those costs, Galley. Which means it is time now to join the Empire. You will serve me in whatever way I require. And if all goes well, you will remain the contingency. If you fail me, then I will find another. For this role is one of great purpose and destiny. Will you be what I require?
I will.
That smile returns.
Most excellent.
But I do not know how.
That will come in time. For now, do you like opera?